The Fantasy Focus Football Podcast is presented by Geico. It is Monday, November 23rd. I am Field Yates, joined by Stefania Bell. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Field. I'm moving ever closer. I swear it's like that cartoon, you know?
Soon enough, this is just going to be the morning fantasy show with Stefania Bell. Of course, Daniel Dopp is also here. Our goal today is to touch on as many fantasy-relevant things from Week 11. We have one game left. It's a good one. Very good one. The Bucks. Hosting the Rams. Plenty at stake in that game, not just in fantasy football, but also in the NFC power hierarchy. I think I might have made that term up on the fly, but it's all good. Unfortunately, though, we have to get right into the news because there's a ton, Stefania, and it begins on a sour note. Joe Burrow has brought a lot of good to Cincinnati. He's going to bring a lot of good to Cincinnati in the future, but for now, he's going to have to spend a while recovering from what was a nasty knee injury yesterday.
Yeah, if you were watching it, and so many people saw it, they chose not to replay it, but you know how these videos make their way around. When you work in the job that I do, people send you still shots, you know, other medical people, just to reinforce, like, oh, you know, everybody has this empathy moment of what happened to him. But, you know, when your foot's planted and you take a hit like that, that's low. The knee has no give to it. And usually these end up as multi-ligament injuries. And that's the suspicion here. So we will wait to hear any more details on it. But Joe Burrow himself made it clear that his season is over. But I loved his tweet saying, you can't get rid of me that easy. And I thought it was really special that former teammates were around him, you know, coming from across the field. What was eerie about it was this was FedEx Field.
It keeps happening.
And so people were like, oh, the turf. And I'm like, first of all, it's grass. Mm-hmm. Second of all, these have been contact injuries. Yeah. Whether it's Alex Smith or Kyle Allen or now Joe Burrow, it's just been bad luck, but it is something.
Yeah, it is something. It goes even further back to RG3 during his incredible run early in his career. And as you said on Twitter, he said, I'll see you in 2021. And Stefania can speak to this much better than I can, but I will be the first to tell you that I'm mindful of the athlete mentality. Think about someone like Adrian Peterson. I believe also Wes Welker, both determined when they tore their ACLs at the end of a season. They said, I'm going to be back for the start of the next year. And they both made miracle comebacks. Hopefully the same is on tap for Joe Burrow. We'll talk more about the fantasy fallout throughout the week. Ryan Finley stepped in. He threw 10 passes. T. Higgins was targeted on 4 of the 10. It's a downgrade. Let's make no mistakes about it. At the same time, I think we got to get a better feel for how this offense looks starting next week, and there might still be enough meat on the bone for both, well, certainly Tyler Boyd and maybe T. Higgins to flash his way onto the flex radar. This was an interesting one yesterday. So the Dolphins were down 20-10 against Denver in the fourth quarter, and Tua got yanked, and it was one of those gray area moments, Stefania. No announcement from the team of anything, but he looked uncomfortable. Did you see anything that maybe you could discern that made you think, even though Brian Flores said this was a coaching decision about performance, they were looking for a spark from Fitz, that maybe there was a medical component as well?
Well, you never know what's underlying it. Like, and I think you're asking a really good question because it's not necessarily that he had an injury, although he was on the injury report because of his foot during the week. So I think people may have thought about that. But I think, you know, Brian Flores is turning out to be a really thoughtful coach. Just you look at the way he's done everything so far. And he was uncomfortable probably for a lot of reasons. But when you factor into the fact that he was struggling from a football perspective, plus his history, he's very new to playing NFL football coming off a major injury. And he has been dealing with this other foot issue this week. I think the cluster of things was like, this is the time to remove him and sort of protect him for next week, which he's already indicated he's protected for next week.
Yeah, I honestly really think that this was simply a coaching decision. You're right that he was uncomfortable, but I think Brian Flores, he kind of just has, I feel like there are coaches that we talk about across sports that have the pulse of their team. I always feel like that's said about Eric Spoelstra in basketball in Miami. Like, he just knows which buttons to push for the type of player that he's dealing with. Brian Flores, also in Miami, seemed to have that same mentality.
He knows that he can count on Ryan Fitzpatrick to step in and be mature about it and not create a big firestorm afterwards. So it was really like he has all the right parts, like yeah. you said.
The circumstances definitely help. And by the way, he said after the game, it's going to be Tua again. And if you're looking ahead to week 12, which I understand, maybe your matchup's already been decided. They do play the Jets, so potentially a good spot there for Tua. Even though there are no bye weeks next week, it's hard for me to envision too many streaming options, but something to at least keep on your radar. Phillip Rivers and the Colts won in dramatic fashion yesterday, Stefania, but they kept cutting to Phillip Rivers, jogging to the locker room and then jogging back. He went to the Blue Medical Tent at one point and then coming back, but he didn't miss any extended time. He had a couple snaps for Jacoby Brissett, came in. I think some of those were mostly by design. Phillip Rivers is the anti-quarterback sneaker. He will not sneak. Jacoby Brissett, who's a big body dude, will sneak. So he was dealing with something. What was it?
He acknowledged it, and okay. he spoke afterward. He said it was his toe. Mm. And you have to hear Phillip Rivers' voice. I was kind of a big toe thing, but, you know, I hear big toe, and this is where your turf toe injuries are. These are not things we like to hear. If you look at Phillip Rivers' history, how many games has he missed because of injury?
He had a torn ACL and he missed exactly zero.
Exactly. That is my point.
Yeah.
And I think he said something that he referenced, you know, when you're 38, like you're feeling it.
My daggum toe.
Exactly.
But shoot.
He and Frank Reich, they both mentioned it, but he kind of said, oh, I anticipate a lot of soreness this week, but I'll be fine. I'll be fine.
It almost looked to me like he was running to the tunnel to keep his like body moving. Like I really thought that like when they were
running
he was
ambling.
He was ambling. That's a good way of putting it. So it looks like Phillip Rivers is going to be fine. We'll talk about the Colts wide receivers throughout the week. I think that there is a especially useful one that we can discuss who I think has the makings of a star. But as we know, Phillip Rivers, not a guy that we were starting consistently in fantasy anyways, but still a notable player, and he is playing really well this season for the Colts. I just really, truly enjoy watching Indy and seeing how complimentary that team has been built by GM Chris Ballard. All right, this is a weird one, Stefania. Julio Jones, of course, started yesterday. There was no issues, as far as I knew, going into the game. And then it felt like in-game management got the best of him. What is he dealing with?
It's a hamstring issue.
Okay.
It was reported that way, that he went to the medical tent because of a hamstring injury in the second quarter. And he came back in the fourth quarter, but, you know, struggling. And we've seen this before, right? It's been all kind of usually a soft tissue injury. He comes out and he's a gamer and he wants to be back in there. So even if he's not 100%, he will put himself back in the game. The question becomes, now what happens afterward? We saw him with a hamstring injury earlier this year. It was kind of the same thing, got hurt in a game, and then he missed a game afterwards. So stay tuned.
Okay. And by the way, those are always the ones that make me a little bit nervous that like, hey, he finished the game. He's fine, right?
He didn't. It was
talk to me
pretty.
On Wednesday.
The finish wasn't pretty. Yeah.
Talk to me on Wednesday. Of course, the Saints get a huge win. We'll talk about their quarterback. You may have heard a little thing or two about him over the weekend in just a moment. Usually, even if I don't know the extent of what a player is dealing with, I have an idea of what the injury is. This is one of those cases where I don't even know what happened to Juju Smith-Schuster, Stefania. So you can fill in the blanks for me.
I posted something last night about when the flag deserves a flag.
Okay.
I don't know if you saw the clip, but he stepped on one of the yellow flags.
Oh, really?
Did you not? Oh, you hadn't said, oh, I'm breaking
the whole
news to
you. Yeah, thank you.
That's a first. No, there was a little clip floating around where you see him, and people seem surprised at his reaction, but he steps on the weight. And if you know these flags, they're weighted, right? So that they don't just flutter in the air. When the official throws them, you throw the flag and it has weight to it. So it lands on the ground like a little beanbag. And he stepped on it and you could just tell he landed awkwardly on it. And I don't think it's necessarily anything serious, but we've all been there, right? Where you step off a curb when you don't know it's there. You step on a pebble and you roll your ankle. It's an official's flag.
Wow. But we've seen some flags, you know, the most notable one was, remember, Zeus, Orlando Brown, the father, the late, great Orlando Brown, one of my favorite players growing up, Brown's offensive tackle who got hit in the eye with a flag once by a referee. That was a big, big deal. This is not the same magnitude, obviously, but no good. Okay, well, the Steelers play Thursday night.
Around.
Yeah, so we'll get an injury report as soon as today from the Steelers. They play Thursday night. That's
a good one. By the way, toe injury is apparently what it's officially being called.
As was the case with Joe Burrow, the Patriots took to Twitter moments after Rex Burkhead left the game with a knee injury saying he's out. The writing seems to be on the wall here, Stefania.
Yeah, I mean, this was this sort of a classic contact ACL mechanism for Rex Burkhead. And if you saw the play, what was really telling was right after he took the hit. It was just a bad angle. You know, his knee is just in that vulnerable position. But as he was kind of flying in the air right afterward, and his leg turns over, it was just very floppy. And you hate to see him. You hate to see these injuries. They're part of the game, but you hate to see it.
He's been one of those players that's popped up sort of at random in fantasy this year, but it sounds like he's not going to be available for the rest of the season for the Patriots. Daniel, you want to ask about somebody, I believe.
I do. I'm just curious understanding that. So obviously we have Damian Harris and James White back there. Sony Michel was activated but inactive last week. Do you think he's someone worth rostering? Because he's available in 85% of leagues, Fields.
Oh, yeah. And I was telling the guys before the show, if anybody who's listening right now or listening later, if you have suggestions for the waiver wire, tweet me at Field Yates, because I write the column every week and I can come up with usually 10 minimum. I'm at six, and I'm like, I don't even want to write about anybody else, because what I don't want to do is I don't want to suggest players. Like, I used Demir Byrd, the Patriots wide receiver, yesterday. Best game of the season, and a massive. At one point, he was, I think, wide receiver one at one point during the day.
Cut to all the Jacoby Myers folks.
Right, but it's like, you know, what am I going to tell you? Hey, go add Demir Byrd, and then have like one catch for 13 yards next week. Like, the egg's on my face in that circumstance. So I'm trying to give you the best of the best. I don't know that Sony Michel is addable for me right now, because Damian Harris, he looks awesome. Every time Damian Harris gets the football, good things happen. He scored again yesterday.
And Sonny Michel hasn't played.
Yeah, it's been
It's been a long
hamstring,
time.
COVID-19
list.
Do you
really think that he's going to go out and be racking up a ton of fantasy points?
My guess is that he'll be a true backup to Damian Harris. And it's worth noting that the last game that Sonny Michel played in before he got hurt, he actually had his best game in a while. He looked good. Just hard for me. Let me just give me a week before I start advocating for Sonny Michel out of the Patriots' backfield. Same division, AFC East, the Jets, who did it again, baby. Still 0-10. LaMichael Perine, though, gets banged up in this game.
Yeah, injured his ankle, and immediately when he was injured, they labeled him doubtful to return. And, you know, usually this, anyone who does football on a field, you know it's questionable to return. That's always the thing. When a player's immediately ruled out, or even when you get a doubtful to return, it's a little more daunting.
Yeah. No doubt. And he was obviously out for the rest of the game. The ageless, peerless Frank Gore had another heavy workload. I thought about him, too, because...
Oh, he was it made me so sad afterward. He doesn't want... He's like, if this is my last year, we can't go out winless.
He can't go out winless. He deserves
it. Come on,
better.
Jets.
Do
it
NFL
for the legend. Just come on.
1 second. You and me, Roger. Roger Goodell, just have a moment here, real quick right here. Just no one else is listening. It's just you and I. Put together a one-day provision where players are allowed to be traded. I know the trade deadline was passed like a month ago, but just for one day, we just make a deal. Frank Gore gets to go somewhere. I don't care where it is. You can send him to Chicago. They're probably going to win a game at some point the rest of this way. Somebody. San Francisco, for reunion. Reunion. Why not? Send him to Kansas City. Let him win a Super Bowl. Do something for Frank Gore. My man does not deserve to go out 0-16. And yeah, he'll maybe possibly return next year, but let's just negotiate a deal, call it even. Frank Gore gets what he wants, and we all win. All right? All right, microphones are back on. Now people can listen one more time. I thought about adding Frank Gore to the waiver wire column, but again, having a hard time because while he has had at least 10 carries in all but two games this season, like, he's had two good fantasy games. Like, I love Frank Gore to death, but my guess is that if Perine misses time, it'll mean more of Josh Adams, perhaps, who's a player that's bounced up and down from their practice squad. They'll find somebody else in that backfield to get some run. I just don't think it's going to be Frank Gore carrying the football 25 times in a game. A couple of injuries that didn't take place during games on Sunday, but actually were stories Sunday morning, Stefania. One was Teddy Bridgewater. This was confusing. Like, there are a lot of moving parts on Sunday mornings. I got friends who have now learned that, like, if you don't text me before, like, 8 a.m. on Sunday, I'm not getting back to you. Because once the show gets going, we're on the air for 3 hours, and I'm like, I can barely keep up with all this.
You're a host,
right?
And an analyst. I'm fascinated that people text you and expect you to answer.
Well, the funny part is,
you probably could.
The best is when, really they're, when they're watching the show. See, I'm watching the show right now. I'm like, okay.
You're on your phone.
Now you have no excuse.
Me.
I'm deleting you from my phone. In any event, then we get the inactives. And, hey, Teddy Bridgewater is active. And then it was like, oh, wait, just kidding. Teddy Bridgewater is inactive. Wait, what? You just told me he was active like 10 seconds ago. So it ended up being that the Panthers deactivated Teddy Bridgewater, which means he did not play. Does that mean you think he might be out this upcoming week against Minnesota?
Not necessarily. I actually thought that he would be out yesterday. Said it on the show. I said it before the inactives came out, that despite the good reports, despite the fact that he had done a little bit of work on Saturday, I expected him to likely miss the game for some of the things we were just talking about, like with Tua. When you have a player where you want to protect them, and you think about Teddy Bridgewater's injury history with his opposite knee, and then he suffers a knee injury to his quote-unquote good side, and even though it wasn't substantial, you still have to take a little extra precaution with a player like that. So I think all those things were encouraging. And I actually said yesterday, I'm surprised this doesn't happen more often. Because quite honestly, teams, do you think about all the things they're inputting and running up the active inactive lists? It's been a long time since I've seen one like that. But it does remind me that almost 99% of the time they get them right.
Well, I've been in the meeting. Usually what we do on Saturday night before a game, you usually have like 5 to 6 locked in. And then it's a debate about the last one or two. And it seems like Teddy Bridgewater was part of that debate on Sunday morning. Just quickly, Stefania, Joe Mixon, the saga of Joe Mixon, reached a new height on Saturday as he went to IR.
Yeah, you know, injured week 6 last week. Now he was 5 weeks post. And now they put him on injured reserve. And I'm sure there are a lot of people asking the question about why not sooner. And I think these are some of the struggles that teams go through where they're really hopeful. Sometimes they're more hopeful than really the injury would suggest is realistic. And the players resisting going on injured reserve because they really want to push to play. Just if you read the tea leaves of what Zach Taylor had said, it spoke to how much Joe Mixon was working to get back. But ultimately, the injury and these midfoot injuries are so difficult. I've said it. I sound like a broken record, but they're nuanced. And sometimes you can be doing really well being static. But when you start introducing more demanding activity, it's problematic. And ultimately, you have to think about the guy's career going forward. So I wouldn't be surprised if the IR just sort of bleeds into later into the season. And it's tough for the Bengals, man, because now you've got your starting running back and your starting quarterback.
I mean, if your season probably is going to finish how we suspect it will, Stefania, with Ryan Finley the rest of the way, like maybe you buy yourself some time with Joe Mixon. I know the player doesn't want
right.
that, but you're Zach Taylor, you're Duke Tobin, their GM, and your mindset should be, in my opinion, what's best for the long haul?
Exactly.
And if there's any vulnerability for Joe Mixon at all, as much as that might disappoint us in fantasy football, Daniel, they might have to just let him sit.
They got so much youth on that team between Burrow and Joe Mixon and T. Higgins and Tyler. Like, they've got a lot of people to be excited about for the future. So, like, don't do anything rash here in the short term.
Also, running back's one of the few positions on the football field where, like, usually you have pretty good instincts and feel from the moment you enter the NFL. There are others where you've really got to develop and it takes time, quarterback being the most obvious. But, like, you know, there's a little bit more nuance of playing cornerback and linebacker and offensive line at the pro level than there is at college. One of the reasons why, A, there are a lot of useful running backs, and B, a lot of rookie running backs do well is because you kind of have the skill set. It's just a matter of how much of that skill set you have from the moment you enter the NFL. All right, so the story of the day in fantasy yesterday was really Taysom Hill going into the day and then after the fact as well. I'll state it one more time. At ESPN, we allowed Taysom Hill to be utilized both at quarterback and tight end. We understand that that generated some uproar amongst some. We have a rule here at ESPN that if a player begins the week with a certain position, we can add to that position eligibility. We cannot take away from that position eligibility. This is not something we told you for the first time on Friday when we learned that he was going to be the starter. It's something that we have told people since really the season began. This is something that has been clear, and I get the frustration. It's perhaps likely a one-week stay, as we saw yesterday. Taysom Hill is not just their quarterback. He was a pretty effective one. So as soon as we have a decision for week 12, and that could be as soon as by the time we're on the air tomorrow, Tuesday, we'll let you know. And I think common sense would suggest that Taysom Hill is going to just be a quarterback. But it might be good enough, Stefania, because what he did yesterday. The thing was that even if Taysom Hill imploded and got you 10 fantasy points, which by basically every quarterback standard is a bad fantasy day, that could be a good tight end day. Right. We ranked him as the number 2 tight end for the week going into the week. And oh, by the way, he's number 2 amongst tight ends.
I was going to say, that's going to hold up.
And behind only the guy that we had ranked ahead of him, Travis Kelce. So let's talk about what we learned yesterday. And I want to ask you, of course, about Drew Brees in a moment. But we learned yesterday that, first of all, don't doubt Sean Payton. Do me that favor, man. This is not some, you know, first-time head coach making an impact decision. This is Sean Payton. He's been doing this for 15 years. One of the best coaches we've seen in a long time in the NFL. And I've actually gotten defensive over this, as if Sean cares what I have to say. But I'm like, a whole week I'm thinking to myself, really? Like, we're not going to give Sean Payton the benefit of the doubt? Like, who deserves the benefit of the doubt if it's not somebody like Sean Payton? He had a belief in Taysom Hill, and it paid off. The raw numbers, 233 passing yards, 51 rushing yards, 2 touchdowns, 1 fumble, 24.4 fantasy points. There were a couple of ducks. I mean, there was a play that looked like a punt. It was caught by Emmanuel Sanders. Like, it was so severely underthrown that Emmanuel Sanders was able to...
He came back. Diving back. It was actually a really impressive
catch. It was a great play by Emmanuel Sanders. He also had a big play to Emmanuel Sanders called back because of a holding. But, Stefania, I think some of the comparisons made for Taysom Hill going into the day yesterday were akin to, like, some thought, oh, this could be Tim Tebow. And maybe that's true. It also kind of reminded me of maybe, like, Cam Newton plus, right? Because 233 passing yards is fine. Yeah. Well, he's a big boy, too. 2 touchdowns. 2 rushing touchdowns. Like, until Drew Brees returns, there's a chance that those who roster Taysom Hill could make a case for him as their starting quarterback.
I think so. And I think what happens in the red zone is really interesting because, and that's where Sean Payton has an advantage because you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know if he's going to run the ball, if he's going to flip the ball on some kind of tricky reverse. Maybe Alvin Kamara will end up throwing it back to him, you know, or is he going to throw a touchdown pass? And I was looking for the long balls yesterday because that's where everybody was expecting him to fail. And I think for the most part, considering this was his first full start, I think we heard that he'd only ever thrown 2 passes in one game. I think Thirsty Kyle gave us that stat last
completed.
Week.
Completed.
Oh, go completed. Worse.
Yeah.
Glad I didn't know that before. But, I mean, this was impressive. It was 4 quarters of Taysom Hill's quarterback, and I think you couldn't have asked for more in his debut.
I have my doubts. Sorry, Gary, go ahead.
I want to ask a real quick question because I think I agree with you with the idea that, like, he's going to have value somewhere at quarterback, but I feel that value, while a lot of it is tied to his legs, like you talked about with the 2 rushing touchdowns, it to me is because he has Michael Thomas out on the field with him. And if you remove Michael Thomas as an offensive piece, that changes the way that I'm going to look at Taysom Hill and this offense. Is that a fair thing to say?
I think that's fine by me. Yeah. I mean, one thing I noticed with Taysom Hill, and this is sort of expected, is that he's more of a see it, throw it quarterback, which might explain something I want to get into in a moment. But what I mean by that is that some quarterbacks are, you know, the guy is, the receiver hasn't even hit his break and the ball's already left the quarterback's hand. Taysom Hill strikes me as one of those guys that, like, all right, Michael Thomas, I see him open, now I just zip it. And he's a big, powerful guy. He can throw the ball fast. So I think that's one of those, that's harder to generally sustain over the course of a season because defenses catch up to a little bit. And I wonder, and I could be off here, I wonder if that's part of the reason why Alvin Kamara had 0 catches yesterday. First time in 55 games that Alvin Kamara did not have a catch. I believe his first game ever without a catch in his career. And the reason why I mentioned, like, maybe that's part of it is that, like, again, Taysom Hill, a little bit less of, like, a rhythm and timing thrower, more of just, like, a see-it-and-stick-it thrower. And a lot of the running back routes from Alvin Kamara are screens or arrow routes, things out of the backfield that are sort of rhythm. It's like, you know, a little bit of footwork here, and then you're tossing it there to Alvin Kamara. So I'm not spooked on Alvin Kamara. I'm not saying his value is decidedly worse with Taysom Hill. It's a one-game sample size.
Right.
But it caught my eyes. It's something I'm going to monitor in their game this upcoming weekend at Denver.
Plus, you know, it'll be interesting as they get more weeks of practice. You're talking about, like, 1 week to open the book on being quarterback for him.
And by the way, the best part of the Taysom Hill experience is, didn't we all talk about how the only thing Michael Thomas needs to get his season on track is Taysom Hill at quarterback? I mean, it was a story going into the day. We had some healthy debates about it on Fantasy Football Now. Hey, can you count on Michael Thomas? You sure can. He looked like Michael Thomas last year. 9 catches, 104 yards on 12 targets. And I'll give credit to Matthew. Now, he was talking about this with Jameis last week. But, you know, he said, hey, you're Jameis Winston. You're stepping in for Drew Brees. What's your mindset going to be? Feed the big dog, right? Well, It was Taysom Hill, not Jameis, but he fed the big dog. 9 catches, 104 yards, 19.4 fantasy points, and he was targeted on six of the first seven.
I saw that. Yeah. That tells me, like, he was planning, this is who I'm looking for. It's just like you said, you know, if he sees him, he sees him open, that's who he's going to.
By the way, and Kyle, by the way, note, this is hilarious, that was the first game in Alvin Kamara's career without a catch, unless you include the Pro Bowl. He was held catchless in one Pro Bowl before as well.
Of course, Kyle has. Yeah.
I think that the window to trade for Michael Thomas is not closed. I think it's a really interesting evaluation, but I think it gets a lot trickier after what we saw yesterday. I'm sort of a hold Michael Thomas guy myself, but I think he'll get a lot of offers this upcoming week. All right, we're going to talk about Andy Dalton, his return in just a moment. But first, the rising generation of NFL superstars have been dropping dimes and creating in space for years, way before they got to the league. Now it's your turn. Create your own highlight reel with X-Factor abilities and innovative new skill stick controls. Swag out and win in style in new backyard football-inspired mode, The Yard. Celebrate your style, showcase your creativity, and rise to fame in a way that only you can. Go all out in Madden NFL 21. Available now. So Andy Dalton returned yesterday. He missed time both because of a concussion and then he tested positive for COVID-19. There was mention yesterday in the broadcast that Dalton is still having some loss of smell and taste, I believe, which are symptoms of COVID-19. The NFL, I think, has made it clear that they don't believe that like loss of smell and taste are symptoms that are going to prevent a player from playing if those are the only lingering symptoms. Anyways, he played and actually looked pretty good yesterday, Stefania. They got their best win of the season by far.
Yeah, I really was wondering what to expect because he talked about, Andy Dalton did, that he still felt a little of this fog or that he was struggling a little bit. He was talking about remnants of the concussion and how it took him a little while to recover from that. And as I mentioned this yesterday, I don't think we can really know. I don't think Andy Dalton can really know, especially with the COVID-19 coming in so soon after. There's sort of a crossing over of those two things that may have made it really difficult for him to feel like himself. You look at some of the professional athletes who've had this talk about still feeling off, even though they're quote unquote recovered from COVID. That there's a lot of things that we don't fully understand. So I was actually a little concerned about Andy Dalton, who was technically healthy by all measures and tests, but hadn't been on a football field, didn't have to process anything in game time. And I was a little concerned about how he would hold up. And I thought, considering, he did remarkably well.
Yeah, he sure did. And he also kept the offense afloat for the other pieces. Ezekiel Elliott had his best game of the season, his first 100-yard rushing game of the year. He scored a touchdown. He had 2 catches for 11 yards. So he finishes with 19.4 fantasy points. And I tell you what, we don't talk about offensive line play that frequently in fantasy. Maybe we don't do it enough. Maybe we do it the appropriate amount. And I'm not saying it was just one player, but the Cowboys made a switch yesterday, moving Zach Martin from right guard to right tackle. That's where he played in college. The guy, as you probably know, is considered by many the best guard in the NFL. And all he did yesterday was seemingly stabilize the offensive line. Again, this is a pretty decent Vikings defensive front. I know there's no Danielle Hunter and Yannick Ngakoue is gone, but still, this isn't a bunch of scrubs out there. Good on the offensive line. I think Zeke, I still have my questions as to whether he's like a lock-it-in RB1. I still think he's closer to a top-end RB2, but that was good to see yesterday, as was the production for two star receivers.
I think, just going back to Zeke for a minute, I think that there were two things. One is he himself credited the offensive line,
yep,
saying that they were the ones who gave him the clean holes to hit, and he was just doing his job. That may be true, but he also looked like he was running better. And he even said on Wednesday that he was still dealing with a little stiffness from his hamstring. The combination of the two, I think, led to his performance, but it did look like he was a healthier Ezekiel.
Yep, and that was good. Certainly was good. They all looked a little bit better coming off that bye. Tony Pollard had a nice game yesterday, too. Like, I think that was more of a reflection that he's a talented player, not really something about him taking away work from Zeke or any concerns about that going forward. The two wide receivers of note are Amari Cooper and CeeDee Lamb.
CeeDee Lamb for catch of the year.
Unbelievable. Oh, so CeeDee Lamb had 4 catches, 34 yards, plus a touchdown. And that catch Stefania is referencing. If you haven't seen it,
you
just go look at
it.
Him and Adam Thielen were like playing a game of horse out there yesterday. Like, who can have a better catch? Both remarkable. And good days for both CeeDee Lamb and Amari Cooper. 6 catches, 81 yards for Cooper. So in 4 of 5 games without Dak Prescott, Amari Cooper still has at least 12.5 fantasy points. That's pretty good. Like, that's actually salvageable. Like, he's still a strong flex consideration at worst, it feels like, most weeks without Dalton. And I think we all believe that this offense will only get better as they have more time together. And by the way, they are still very much in the NFC East playoff picture, as all 4 teams are now tied with 3 wins. Let's get into the top performers. And the Geico good news of the day is the Justin Herbert, Keenan Allen duo. We are just so lucky to have great quarterbacks in the NFL right now. They're going to be great for a long time. Patrick Mahomes leads the way, and just incredible performances from Deshaun Watson yesterday. Russell Wilson's great, and also Kyler Murray. Justin Herbert is very much in that conversation, my friends. Justin Herbert is just rewriting rookie record books. He already has 5 games with 3 passing touchdowns, more than any other rookie in NFL history. He is most likely going to break Baker Mayfield's rookie passing touchdown record with 27. I think he'll cruise to 30 this year. He's got 4 games this year with over 325 passing yards. Yesterday, he had 366 passing yards, 3 touchdowns, 27.7 fantasy points. How's this for a Keenan Allen line, Stefania?
16
catches, 145 yards, and a touchdown. He fumbled, and he still had 34.5 fantasy points.
Yeah.
There are a lot of cool plays from the weekend. Go find the touchdown pass from Justin Herbert to Keenan Allen. And what's going to blow you away is how routine it looked. It looked. I mean, Justin Herbert dancing left, just sort of zips it. And I got to be careful with this kind of stuff because I don't really want to compare anybody to Patrick Mahomes. But there are some shades of Patrick Mahomes and Justin Herbert that is just downright frightening for the Broncos and the Raiders, who don't have their own Patrick Mahomes or Justin Herbert right now. But Derek Carr's been great. So anyways.
You know what's fascinating, though, is there's this element, and I would be really curious. This is going to be a little off-season project of mine. You know, we go to the combine, all these things. There's a poise to Justin Herbert that I don't recall hearing enough about that. But this is the big arm. Yeah. We all heard about that. But why were we also into it? We didn't know it was going to happen with Tyrod Taylor. But it's really his poise, because think of how he started. He started on a day where he thought the coach was joking.
6 minutes of head start.
Right. And he has just taken it and run with it and evolved, continued to evolve as he's going. It doesn't seem like anything phases him. It doesn't seem like the game, you know, they talk about the moment being too big or the game being too fast. That's not happening with him. And then you have a receiver like Keenan Allen, a veteran who's so solid, got such a good hands, and they clearly have this relationship going that is going to be good for a long time.
I have a theory. Too much coverage of the draft. Too much. And I love it. Like, I am obsessed with the NFL draft. I think about it all year round, not just the 3 months leading up to the NFL draft. Many people do. When I say there's too much, I mean that what happens is that I think there's like paralysis by analysis or something like that. We start to look for warts way too frequently on these young men.
DK Metcalf,
man.
Great example.
Overthought it. Like, yeah, you're 6'4", you're 225 pounds, you run a 4.340. Like, I will take, and I understand there have been others that have not done that. I'll take my chances on DK Metcalf. I think it happens. That's a great example, Daniel. I think what happened with Justin Herbert is that he really didn't do much poorly during his time at Oregon. He's not this like super flamboyant,
super flashy,
right?
Dynamic. And then Tua was the big story.
Right.
Obviously, Joe Burrow's big story coming. But wow, Justin Herbert, what a revelation.
He throws some seed. So great. I think it's obvious that the number one quarterback wide receiver stack right now in fantasy is these two players. Aaron Rodgers and Davante Adams, I hear you, but still.
One thing real quick, just while we're talking about how great Justin Herbert is. He has one game as a rookie with fewer than 20 fantasy points on the season. One game, including the game that he started with 6 minutes of a heads up. He only has one game where he did not reach that 20-point floor. If you're talking about looking for a quarterback, especially when we're saying quarterback scoring is up across the board, for him to have that floor but still have that ceiling as a rookie is just unreal. I'm so excited about this kid's future.
It's just absurd. It's silly right now. And all the factors that work beyond the fact that they're awesome continue to prevail, right? They keep themselves in games because they do so many Chargers things that he needs to throw for 366 yards. Anyways, more good news yesterday is Kirk Cousins had 314 passing yards for the Vikings, 23 fantasy points. You know, just a reminder, really, it's a good spot when you can play against that Cowboys defense, which has been a little bit better of late, but maybe Alex Smith. Again, I don't know how many streaming quarterbacks there will be this week because no teams are on a bye, but something to keep in mind. And part of the reason why he was so great yesterday was that his two wide receivers are great as well. Yeah. 8 catches, 123 yards, 2 touchdowns for Adam Thielen, 32.3 fantasy points. Justin Jefferson followed along with 3 catches, 86 yards, 1 touchdown.
We got 2 Justins in the running for Rookie of the Year.
We really do. don't you think you got to figure that Herbert runs away with it, right?
I think people don't want to be too quick to be like, oh yeah, Justin Jefferson, we loved you for a minute and now, but I think it's going as
unless it's a running back like Saquon his rookie year, it's almost always a quarterback that wins the award. We need a couple more categories.
Right.
Quarterback MVP, rest of league MVP, quarterback rookie of the year, other rookies of the year. But anyways, Justin Jefferson would be in that conversation. Looks like a star as usual.
As much as Justin Jefferson is a catch, I think it's hard to pass on Justin Herbert.
Oh my God. Matthew's not here, but Daniel's you just, are ably filling in with the bad jokes.
Daniel Dobb will be hosting the fantasy show on ESPN Plus.
That's right. Today. That's actually a real statement. With Matthew not being here, I am hosting the fantasy show today.
You're just warming up the cords. Yeah.
Yep.
First time all season.
Fire up your ESPN Plus.
Just kidding. Dalvin Cook, by the way, continues to do Dalvin Cook stuff. He had 25 fantasy points yesterday. He's got at least 25 fantasy points in 5 of his past 7 games. Alvin Kamara and Dalvin feel like the sort of the MVPs amongst players that were drafted where you expect, you know, to carry them for the season. Herbert will probably be in the mix as well. As ridiculous as that may have sounded at the beginning of the season, Justin Herbert might be right there. But Dalvin Cook continues to do brilliant things. And how about DJ Moore catching on of late? Yesterday, it was PJ Walker, XFL standout, starting for the Panthers. And it actually didn't impact their passing game that much, Stefania. 11 targets for DJ Moore. 10 for... Oops, sorry about this. I'm getting a phone call, so I can't see this. 10 for Curtis Samuel and 9. Well, my iPad takes calls. It's weird.
Sure.
9, I believe it was, for Robbie Anderson. So 3 guys that got plenty of volume yesterday.
Yeah, no score for Robbie Anderson, so not as flashy. But, I traded with Adam Schefter in the War Room League and got DJ Moore.
I remember that.
Needed a tight end. I gave him Mark Andrews. I was willing to do it because I needed wide receiver help so badly. And I was reluctant to do it. But DJ Moore has been awesome for me the last 2 weeks. So I hope this continues. And it certainly seems like they haven't skipped a beat while Teddy Bridgewater is down. And who knows if he'll be back this week or not. But you feel more comfortable, even if he isn't, putting your same wide receivers out there. DJ being Moore and Samuel, obviously, a little bit more flash yesterday than Robbie Anderson, but Robbie Anderson's still heavily targeted.
It certainly was just a ridiculously productive day for all Panthers wide receivers. So good to see that they can basically keep things rolling in the absence of Teddy Bridgewater. As mentioned, they play Minnesota later on this week. Deshaun Watson, we talked about him. He was just brilliant yesterday. 31.4 fantasy points, his best game of the season. And oh, by the way, quarterback 1 pending the Monday Night Football results. So he is just spectacular and good to see him. I mean, I don't think it's as simple. I really don't think that like attributing his success since Bill O'Brien's firing, like I think it's just like they kind of started playing better. Remember, they started the season against the Steelers, the Ravens, the Chiefs, and somebody else who was good. Like I kind of expected them to go 0-4. They've been better of late. They've won 3 of their past 6 games with a winnable game on Thanksgiving on tap. So Deshaun's brilliance is more like that's what you expect out of Deshaun Watson because he's Deshaun Watson. Deontay Johnson, by the way. Listen. How about this dude? Wow. 12 catches, 111 yards, 23.1 fantasy points to Fanya. Like, basically the prevailing thought is they're all good. All Steelers wide receivers are good. This guy is...
Yeah, the real question, the dilemma that I have, and I have this dilemma every week because I have them both in a lot of leagues, is Deontay Johnson or Chase Claypool.
Yeah.
Every week. And they only, if you look back across the season, the only games that Deontay Johnson's really been invisible are the ones he left early because he got hurt. And he's missed, I think he missed one game because of injury. I can't recall off the top of my head. But other than that, when he's played, he's been double-digit fantasy point productive. And Chase Claypool has been double-digit fantasy point productive.
Yeah.
Although there's been a little flipping and flopping between who seems to be more heavily favored in a game. I don't think you can go wrong with either one.
There are so we were at a point, and I'm like, going to wear this. We were at a point earlier this year where we were like, Juju, he's got to earn his way back into your lineups. Now it's like, just if you have a Steelers wide receiver, just play them. I don't care if it's like a guy who's, I don't care if it's Ray McLeod. Play him too. Like, for all I know, he'll have a touchdown on Thursday night against the Baltimore Ravens. All three Steelers star receivers have just been stars of late. Deontay Johnson, man, I don't know where they find these wide receivers. Well, I do know where they find them, but they just continue to draft at an elite level.
They also seem very comfortable. Just offensively, they're very comfortable.
Yeah.
Ben is comfortable. They're not having to, I think they're playing him very smart. There's a lot of talk early in the season, coming back from the elbow surgery, I think people were looking really carefully and saying, oh, he can't throw the deep ball anymore. And I don't think he's going to put up those kind of games where he was doing massive throwing volume, at least for the massive air yards. But there's a balance there that they're comfortable with, that they're finding. And it's going to protect Ben deep into the offseason, which is what they're planning on.
Yeah, I mean, they certainly want to be playing in February, and they right now, they are 10-0 with a legit chance, I'm telling you now, to be favored in every game the rest of the way. We're going to talk about some breakout players in just a little bit, but first, do you own or rent your home? Sure you do, and I bet it can be hard work, but you know what's easy? Bundling policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to Geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit Geico.com today. That's Geico.com.
Shell knows that between every tee-up, layup, and batter-up that you can't wait to catch up with your favorite podcast. So come to Shell and get three things done at once. First, fill up with Shell V-Power Nitro Plus to help keep your engine running like new. Then, save up with the Fuel Rewards program and never pay full price for gasoline again. And finally, snack up with in-store rewards to save even more money at the pump. All right, time to wrap it up and get back to the action. Make the most of the stop you need with Shell in engines that continuously use Shell V-Power Nitro Plus Premium Gasoline. See full terms and conditions at FuelRewards.com.
All right, here we go with some breakout players potentially from yesterday. And I think this one's legit. And I was saying earlier how I'm sort of calling upon you, the masses, to send me your waiver wire thoughts. If there's anybody you consider adding, there is a clear-cut top waiver wire priority for this week. His name is J.K. Dobbins. 70 rushing yards yesterday with a touchdown, 2 catches, 2 targets, 15 yards through the air, 18.5 fantasy points. So those are good numbers, but this is the numbers that matter. These are the numbers that matter the most to Fanya. Mark Ingram had 5 yes. snaps yesterday. There are a lot of people who believe that Mark Ingram is a heart and soul player for the Ravens, and that's the truth, right? I mean, big trust and all the stuff that he did last year for them was huge. Yes. At some point, though, so that's important. But when you're 6-4 and you're reeling, you've lost back-to-back games with the Steelers on deck, you got to play the best guy. Yep. It's just a fact. There's just no debating it, right? And right now, the best guy in their backfield is J.K. Dobbins. Here's the hope. The rest of the way, it's his job. If so, it's a league-winning ad.
I was just going to ask you, why is it that it is week 11 and this we are just starting to see this division?
You know what? I think I'm onto this a little bit because I was thinking about the Eagles and a couple others, right? Like there are so the Eagles right now, people are like shouting at the top of their lungs for Jalen Hurts over Carson Wentz. This is a little bit off topic from fantasy, but hear me out for a second. Is that it's really easy for us on the outside to say, like, all right, pull the plug there, bench this guy there, sit him there, play this rookie over this veteran there. we often lose track of the human element that is involved with when you go to work every single day with people and you earn the respect and the trust and the, you know, and just the love of people that you spend every single day with. And I think that's a part of it, because I don't know how long it took the Ravens to realize that J.K. Dobbins was a more explosive, powerful, more explosive and dynamic player than Mark Ingram. But I can't imagine it was like yesterday, right? Like, I think they probably learned it a long time ago, Stefania. But when Mark Ingram signs last year and is a huge part of what you do, is one of the most important and visible voices during a season in which you went 14-2 and were considered a Super Bowl favorite until you decided to just drop the ball in the first round of the playoffs, like first game of the playoffs, I think that's part of it. In the same way that, like, as much as Carson Wentz is struggling right now, A, we don't know how far along Jalen Hurts is in his development, and B, like, Carson's the guy. He's a leader. He's the captain. He is the centerpiece of the franchise. If they pull the plug on him, like, is there any turning back? And that's a question. So anyways, that's a long-winded way of saying that we all probably are being proven correct in our assessment that it should have been J.K. Dobbins' job from the beginning. It's just easier sometimes for us to go ahead and assign a player as a backup before he actually is a backup. Tangent, I know.
Yeah, no. But I hear what you're saying. I almost find the Carson Wentz one easier to buy than this, just because of the way the Ravens have traditionally operated.
Sure, that's fair. Yeah, and I think quarterback is probably a different category than every other spot too, right? Here's another one. Damir Bird. We mentioned him earlier on in the show. So I guess I kind of spoiled my...
Available.
Yeah. Damir Bird, and he had 6 catches for 132 yards and a touchdown. And you know what? Like, good for Damir Bird.
Yeah, I know.
And here's
good
the reason why is day. That Damir Bird plays like every single snap for the Patriots. And basically every single snap he does the same thing. Sprints down the field. He's a decoy, right? He's like, we got to clear out space. And that's their best way of clearing out some space. Because anybody who knows Damir Bird a little bit, like, very fast guy who's in his NFL career has had a few big plays. That's what he does. And every once in a while, what this reminds me of is I always used to, so Doc Rivers, when he coached the Boston Celtics, like every single game when they had Paul Pierce and Ray Allen and Kevin Garnett, the first play of the game would always be drawn up for our colleague here, Kendrick Perkins, the center who was like a tough-minded, defensive, hard-nosed player. And everybody'd be like, dude, you've got Kevin Garnett, Ray Allen, Paul Pierce, 3 Hall of Famers, and you're giving Perk the first look? And Doc would say, I'm going to ask Perk to play 28 minutes tonight and do nothing but set screens, take elbows to the face, draw hard fouls. Like, I got to give him some love every once in a while, right? Yeah, he gets a bucket. So Damir Bird, you're going to run like 70 wind sprints a game. So here's your bucket. You just got a layup. And
I thought maybe you were going to say the decoy had worked so well for so long that now teams were like, okay, that's just Damir Bird. Yeah, we're not going to pay attention to him.
The funny part is it was like a beautiful throw and catch. Like, it was one of the best plays of the day.
Is there anything quantifiable to this field? Because when I'm looking at the breakdown of Damir Bird, okay, in every game where he has had at least 7 targets, he's hit double-digit fantasy points.
Yeah, so was that like 3 or 4 this season?
4 games.
Yeah, I mean, I guess.
You just got to figure out when those 4 are.
I don't have a rhyme or reason to those.
You can't talk to somebody and just see if they could let us know ahead of time if he's going to get 7 or more targets, maybe?
Is Cam available for an interview on the show this week? By the way, I'm going to die on the hill. Cam has proven to be a high-floor quarterback this season.
He has.
I don't want to hear that. I don't want to hear otherwise.
He's like that guy that you never really feel great starting at the position, but he still gives you the points. Like, he's not losing you any weeks.
Yeah, dude, he had 19 points again yesterday. Yeah. Like, he had one terrible week when I think it might have been the Broncos game, but besides that, he's been pretty solid. Let's talk about some players, where they've been, and what do they mean, what does it mean going forward? We can be a little bit faster on these. Mark Andrews, 5 catches, 96 yards, and a touchdown, Stefania. And I would tell you, by the way, where you been, but he was tight end 1 the week before with 13 fantasy points.
Yeah, you know, I think for a while there was he was blocking a lot more, you know, and they lost a tight end for the season due to injury. So who knows? There were a lot of factors involved in that, but it's not like the guy doesn't still know how to make big plays.
Sure. No, he's been a very, very valuable piece for them, and I expect to be, because you know why? There are like 4 tight ends you can trust going forward. Maybe Dallas Goedert's one of them. 5 catches, 77 yards, and a touchdown. And let me tell you this. Junk time touchdown. Eagles down 22-10 with like 14 seconds yesterday, and I love it. I don't know why teams play it all the way out. Like, I'm sure the Eagles, you know, first of all, like, you need a miracle. Right. Maybe they want the miracle. And second of all, it's like,
it's happened for them before. Yeah, they've had miracles.
But it totally has a bigger influence on fantasy than it does the real outcome of the game. 18.7 fantasy points for Dallas Goedert. I'm going to stop short of calling it a breakout, Stefania. But again, just a reminder, like, when we've been telling you, like, hey, like, I think Dallas Goedert's a worthwhile add and he'd have those games with like two or three catches, it's because a talented guy, clearly. And, Philly and actually the Browns. The Browns got to get luckier with weather at some point. Oh my God. Every game they play these days is in the pouring worst. Rain. Gosh.
It's the worst. Yeah.
How about Melvin Gordon yesterday? 84 rushing yards and two touchdowns.
You know what I was thinking when he was running? He's running like a guy who's watching Philip Lindsay take his job away from him. That's what I thought. Like,
running like a guy.
He's been on the sideline going, Philip Lindsay's running really hard. Yep. And he's getting more opportunities than I am.
Yeah, and a guy who's listening to the Fantasy Focus recently. But I am fading him in Week 12, by the way. He plays against the Saints. I'm going to have Kyle dig deeper on this because I think low-key, one of the most impressive streaks in football right now, the Saints have not allowed a 100-yard rusher since November of 2017. That's 3 years ago. That's absurd. They are just ridiculous defensively. And then one more here. Good little hat tip to Mike Clay, who mentioned to us that at some point, Clyde Edwards-Helaire was going to find the end zone more frequently. His OFP, opportunity for fantasy points, that Mike developed was high for a guy who had not scored that much. The good news was he scored yesterday twice in that game. What a fun game that was last week between them and the Raiders.
It was so much fun. And hello, Raiders. Like, yeah, for real. Like, look, I mean, I got to admit, I have not always been a Derek Carr fan, but I'm seeing something. Like, I think, and I've heard a couple other people talk about just the control of the offense, the command of the offense. That is happening.
You know, they kind of remind me of Indiana on Saturday. Like, even in defeat, like, I respect the Hoosiers more by keeping it close than I did coming into the game. Really impressive effort from the Raiders, who I think are going to be a playoff team this season. All right, let's get through some of these guys, Stefania, that, like, what the heck happened yesterday? And I'm going to scroll down. I know we got a bunch, so I'm just going to jump through to some that I think are more important here, is that Hollywood Brown, Stefania, zero catches on three targets.
I'm aware.
One of the worst values of the year was Hollywood Brown.
He's on my fantasy team in the Scott Fishbowl League we play in, and I thought, and I'll tell you why I thought it. Last year, he was coming off this major foot surgery, coming in as a rookie. We didn't know what to expect. And I told everyone, you know, it takes guys after the Lisfranc surgery, it often takes them a while to get their speed 100% back. Sometimes they develop soreness throughout the season. Well, his speed came back real quick. And he did develop soreness. He had a screw that was taken out after the season, which is not uncommon. It's there for a while, then you get it removed later. And I saw him at Super Bowl. And he said his foot was pain-free. He felt great. And I thought, well, here's where he takes the next level jump. He's going to go into next season. He's had a good start, better than we expected. And now he's got no health issues going in. This is going to be wide open. Him and Lamar Jackson are going to have another year together.
Yeah.
Where did I go wrong?
You know what? So I will always remember this. I'm 99% positive it was our friend Adam Levitan who noted that if you just sort of take the criteria, body type of Marquise Brown, he's like 5'10", like 155 pounds. There's like no historical data of a guy that succeeded at that size in the NFL. And now I know one of the big stories this offseason was how Hollywood Brown put on 20 pounds of muscle. They're NFL players. Like, a lot of them get stronger when you spend 5 months lifting weights. But just, you know what? First of all, not a prolific passing offense. Second of all, like, just... either it's a lack of vertical shots or I don't know. It just,
Well, their whole offense is a mess. So I don't know that I would totally label it all on him, but yeah. I would have bought that argument more if he never had shown us what we saw in the first year.
Yeah, he did look pretty solid last year, but not great in his second season. Daniel, what do you got?
Phil, I just want to take a moment to just appreciate you. Adam Levitan said Marquise Brown is 5'9", 170 with a Lisfranc on his resume. Full list of wide receivers since 2012. Who have finished in the top 10 at the position and weigh less than 180 pounds? Nobody.
Wow.
That tweet was from July 20th, 2020. And the idea that your brain just retains this information so seamlessly makes me hate you and love you all at the same time.
I'm going to take a moment to just say that my producer on the Project 11 piece, Dan Lindbergh, who's extraordinary, he watches Fantasy Football Now with his daughter, who is less than two. And she points out that, Daddy, these two have computers, meaning Matthew and I, and that one doesn't. And I said, Dan, tell her that's because his computer is up
here. It's in his brain.
It's up here. Well, that computer is up here.
Well, first of all, you guys are very sweet in saying this. But second of all, you know, like we always make the joke about how, like, you know, the person who can store only useless information. That's me.
Like, that's not. It's,
you know,
not
you want
useless,
important
though.
Stuff.
Not useless.
Problem. Okay. Yeah. Well,
I mean, for the, it's not a problem. It's just a problem for the rest of us.
The right
memory
line of work.
Bank is fading. Yours is.
It's a good thing I wasn't like a finance broker or something. I would not be nearly of much value. Speaking of players that have faded recently, Travis Fulgham, man, what happened? Here's the good news for Travis Fulgham. He had 7 targets yesterday. Here's the bad news. He had 1 catch for 8 yards over his past 2 games. He's got 2 catches for 16 yards. Ugh, if I told you he was going to get 12 targets over a 2-game stretch, Stefania, you'd be like, okay, keep starting him.
I know, and I didn't, to be honest, I didn't watch this game closely enough. This is one of the ones I have to go back and look at. What was Alshon Jeffrey doing out there? Did he do anything?
Collecting checks.
Yeah, because he didn't catch the ball. I'm just trying to figure out, was there more personnel switching around? Like, what happened that Travis Fulgham had such a bad day?
It just was... Ugh, just,
it was just the Eagles?
First of all, the Eagles' offense looks like junk. The weather is just terrible, obviously. Again, in Cleveland, it stayed raining all day. So it's a mess right now in Philly. It is an absolute mess.
And I think the question is, going forward, Can you trust him?
I'm having a hard time with it. It's a good matchup next week, we believe, against Seattle. So I think it's going to take one more week of a real clunker for me to not continue to utilize him in some lineups. But obviously, confidence has waned dramatically with Travis Fulgham.
Because in the playoff stretch for fantasy, they're playing Arizona, Dallas, Washington. Like, he could be excellent if you still trust him at that point.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Oh, man, that schedule just lined up nicely. The Eagles, by the way, still in first place in the NFC East.
Is there any conversation here? I mean, when I look at that Eagles offense, especially after this last week, everything with Carson Wentz just feels discombobulated. It doesn't feel in rhythm. There's no sync. And even if I love Travis Fulgham or I the idea of Miles Sanders, I've been waiting for Miles Sanders. I would love to have a real running back on my roster with how bad the running back position has been. But everything in Philly just seems so out of sorts.
One of those years.
It's like, and we all feel it. That's why we're all uncomfortable. It's like one of those things where you don't really want to look, or like when a comedian's not good, you just want them to take him off the stage. That's how it feels for Philly.
Yeah.
Like, there's just nothing consistent with the offense right now. It doesn't, it's uncomfortable.
The only thing that's good right now in Philadelphia for the Eagles is sports radio, because they are on fuego right now. They are loving
undefeated
the content. Let's get to a little bit of Monday Night Football content. And if we had to rank the running backs in tonight's game, it's a double-barreled conversation. It's not just the Rams. It's also the Bucks. So I'll start, Stefania, and then you can see if yours match up. If I were to rank the Rams running backs for tonight, best chance for a big game, Darrell Henderson. Mm-hmm. The guy with the chance to... you know what? I think Darrell Henderson's floor is still higher than Malcolm Brown. I think he has the best chance for a big game and has the highest floor. But if you are maybe, you know, I bottom line, I was going to try to make the case for starting Malcolm Brown. It's like you're hoping for a couple touchdowns, but the case is that, like, those happen randomly. It's clearly Darrell Henderson, Malcolm Brown, Cam Akers. Any disagreement there?
Nope. Not even a conversation worth having to me.
Yeah, I agree. And then on the Bucks running backs, like, we've been doing this for 11 weeks, but we'll keep it rolling for one more.
Ronald Jones.
I'll go Ronald Jones and I'll go Leonard Fournette, and I'll just hope that the game script works in Jones' favor, because it should be a low scoring game tonight. Daniel, what do you got?
Do you have Ronald Jones scoring like 27 or 28 points? Because I need 25 out of Leonard Fournette. So if he's just going to be the number two guy, I want to make sure they're getting enough for both of them.
Okay, gotcha. I don't have Ronald Jones scoring 27 or 28, but actually I just reran the numbers. He has 38. So
38.
Fournette could be the RB2.
So 25 is totally in play for Leonard Fournette tonight.
Well, the question was, is there a Monday Night Football miracle at wide receiver?
Ooh.
Maybe there's one at running back tonight. You know what? Daniel and I have already discussed what I need tonight. Uh-huh. Daniel needs something we now know. Oh. Anything you really need tonight, Stefania?
I do, but I'd have to pull it up. But let's put it this way. I'm playing against Matthew in the War Room League.
Yes.
I haven't even looked at the score because I didn't want to, because he started running away with it with the silliness of last night's game, because, of course, he has Tyreek Hill. So I almost just – I just didn't check the score.
Sure.
But I do have – I think he has a running back. I think I have Ryan Succop tonight. I have somebody in the game tonight, so I'll figure out my miracle while you two chat.
Okay. Well, by the way, Daniel is playing against Matt Harrington, our producer, in the league, in which he needs 25 fantasy points. So we're going to win either way. I think the bottom line is that we feel like this has a chance to be a lower scoring game than we normally see involving the Rams and the Buccaneers. We talked about Tom Brady. It's a possible sit this week. Maybe you stream someone like Taysom Hill or otherwise at quarterback. That being said, it's really hard to sit Tom Brady in general. He is the GOAT after all. This is one of those games that might be more like 23-21 as opposed to like 35-31. Have you figured out your miracle yet?
I need Daryl Henderson to go minus 20.
-20.
You never know. You never know. Stranger things have happened in fantasy football. Actually, they haven't. But 2020 is a weird year, so maybe something totally bizarre can happen. All right, that's all for us today. On Tuesday, here's what we're going to do. We're going to do waiver wires. We're going to do some injury updates. We're going to do some news because we got three games on Thursday. So we will have some injury reports. We have three shows this week. Wednesday is our normal Friday show. It's Thanksgiving week. We hope that you all are having a safe plan ahead. In the meantime, we're back tomorrow. But check out the fantasy show on ESPN Plus.
Then field your waiver suggestions.
That's right. I need them. And watch Daniel on the fantasy show. We're back tomorrow. We'll talk to you guys then. For Stefania and Daniel, I'm Field. Peace out.
Fantasy. You're in the 06010.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
Throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.